Test 1, 2. Make sure it's working. Test 1, 2. Testing 1, 2. Is the microphone on? Test 1, 2. Test. This is why we're testing it. There we go. Wireless microphones can be challenging. All right. Again, it's good to see so many visitors here this afternoon with us on this beautiful Sabbath day. I'd like to start today by looking at the specific goal that God set about when he started back into creation, the purpose and goal for mankind. Let's go back to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1, we have a very familiar and basic scripture. But it indicates what God had in mind when he was creating man during that creation week. In verse 26 of chapter 1, God said, "Let us make man in our image, according to our own likeness. Let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the birds of the air, and over the cattle and all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth." So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. This was the first step that God did in fulfilling his purpose. He created a being, now known as man, in his own image and likeness. Let's drop down to chapter 2 in verse 18. "And the Lord God said, 'It is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper comparable to him.'" Verse 20, verse 21, "And the Lord God caused a deep sleep to fall on Adam, and he slept, and he took one of his ribs, closed up the flesh in its place, and then the rib which the Lord God had taken from the man he made into a woman, and he brought her to the man. And Adam said, 'This is now bone of my bones and flesh of my flesh. She will be called woman because she was taken out of the man.'" Verse 24, "Therefore a man shall leave his father and mother and be joined to his wife, and they shall become one flesh." God created at the very beginning what became the foundation of a family. The family of man. Of course, we've departed from that as a society. I mean, the general belief now is that we originated from other origins, but God had something in mind when he created the first human beings. He wanted to have a family that would continue to grow into eternity. But as we know, the story went wrong at the very beginning. Adam and Eve didn't get it right. They began a family, even though they had been ejected out of the garden. And what began was just the beginning of the story of man down through time. We see that over in chapter 4, beginning in verse 1. "Now Adam knew Eve, his wife, and she conceived and bore Cain and said, 'I have gotten a man from the Lord.' And she bore again, this time his brother Abel. Now Abel was a keeper of sheep, but Cain was the tiller of the ground." So here we have Adam and Eve out of the garden. They start a family, and we have two sons born. And we know the story. "In the process of time," verse 3, "it came to pass that Cain brought an offering of the fruit of the ground to the Lord, and also brought of the firstlings of his flock and of their fat, and the Lord respected Abel and his offering. But he did not respect Cain and his offering, and Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. So the Lord said to Cain, 'Why are you angry, and why has your countenance fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted? And if you do not do well, sin lies at the door. Its desire is for you, but you should rule over it. So we have the very first family, two sons, and we begin with problems. And of course, you know the story, Cain ended up killing Abel, and then God confronted him in chapter 4. Let's take a look here in verse 9. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" And then he did what is so typical for men and women down through time when they're confronted. They deny what they in fact know. He said, "I don't know." "What do you mean you don't know? I mean, you just killed him and you don't know where he's at?" But notice what he said in addition to denying that he knew where his brother was. He said, "Am I my brother's keeper?" What am I supposed to know about my brother? Am I my brother's keeper? Brethren, that's the topic that I want to address this afternoon in the time that we have together. What about this statement, "Am I my brother's keeper?" Stated another way, we as brethren need to be concerned about each other and get along. That's a very important part of a healthy congregation. And I'm doing this as a review, not necessarily because I think the Cambridge Church has that difficulty. In fact, I will go on record to say that we have very little of that. In fact, I tell people Cambridge is the warmest, friendliest congregation I've ever had the pleasure to be a part of. And I really, that's just a statement of fact. But I think it is important for us to take a look at this particular dynamic that I think we enjoy here. People are concerned for each other. People look out for each other so that we maintain it and enhance it. Let's go over to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, and I'm going to read verse 23. As here we have 2 points, there are actually four here, but we're going to focus in on two of them. Verse 23 says, "Let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. And let us consider one another in order to stir up love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, as is the manner of some, but exhorting one another, and so much the more as you see the day approaching." Here we have enumerated, and at least the way I've enumerated it, there are 4 points. The first one being that we are to hold fast to the confession of our hope without wavering. And this is all in the context of the following points of looking out for each other, considering one another, and not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. You know, that is so important that as the end approaches, Satan is going to do his dead level best to drive brethren apart, or to at least get us to argue with each other so that we do not have the dynamic that we should have in a family relationship. So let's take a look at two of these points, considering one another and also not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together. Let's go over to James chapter 2. There is physical consideration that needs to be given. James chapter 2. in verse 14. We'll begin there. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith, but does not have works? Can faith save him? This is a popular premise that is postured in the Christian community, you know, just have faith. James speaks to the heart of the matter in a very pragmatic context. If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warmed and filled. You know, we talk the talk. But you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. When we're together as a church and as a family, when we're talking about considering one another, it involves some very basic things. And James talks let's go to James chapter 1 in verse 27. Here he defines pure religion. You know, there's a lot of religion in the world, but here's a biblical definition of pure and undefiled religion. Verse 27, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, : to visit orphans and widows in their trouble and to keep oneself unspotted from the world. You know, I find it interesting that the definition of pure and undefiled religion comes down to some very basic things, taking care of those in need. Obviously, those that have real needs, not imagined needs. But I've also found it interesting with respect to widows is that we are to visit them not on in the good times, but rather in their trouble. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Beginning in verse 1. Now concerning the collection of the saints, as I have given orders to the churches of Galatia, so you must do also. On the first day of the week, let each one of you lay something aside, storing up as he may prosper, that there be no collections when I come. And when I come, whomever you approve by your letters, I will send to bear your gift to Jerusalem. But if it is fitting that I go also, they will go with me. So here we have an example in the New Testament church where the folks in Jerusalem, or the brethren in Jerusalem, were having difficulty, and they were taking up collections in other churches to provide for their needs. Let's go over to Galatians. Galatians chapter 6. Beginning in verse 1, and we talked about, you know, basic physical needs that we need to consider one another, but there's also consideration that must be given in a spiritual sense. And I think some of this we've been seeing in the local communities, and we can take this to a spiritual level. You know, you see posters and billboards at times, friends do not let friends drive drunk. There's a time when a real friend will step in and challenge and engage you in your best interest, and that's something we should do. We'll look at the methodology of how to do that in a few minutes. Verse 1, brethren, if a man is overtaken in any trespass, you who are spiritual, restore such one in a spirit of gentleness, considering yourself, lest you also be tempted. Bear one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ. You know, there are all of us, and this is why God wants us to get together. This is why the stay-at-home concept doesn't work real well, because all of us need the interaction with people of like mind. Otherwise, we come up with some, well, let's just state it, crazy ideas. You ever notice that? If you ever had ideas and then, you know, you talk to a good friend and you say, well, do you really think that's a good idea? Well, what do you mean? By discussing it with other people, there are course corrections, and that is why it is so important to have the interaction with the brethren so that we don't get off course with some kind of crazy idea. I always think my ideas are really good. You know, when I have an idea, you know, I think it's the best thing since sliced bread until I talk to Daniel and Susan and, you know, two or three of my engineers, and if I really want to know whether it's good or not, I have an individual in the tool room that is a stated pessimist. Actually, he says that a pessimist is simply an optimist with experience. So if you really want to test your idea, go find someone like that, and they'll tell you what they really think, because and there's value in that. You know, I'm not suggesting we should become pessimists, but it's important to interact with other people and test your thoughts and ideas to see whether or not you've really thought through them. Matthew chapter 5. Matthew chapter 5, verse 22. Here we have Jesus Christ giving instruction to his disciples, and this is actually a location that I hope to visit next week. And one of the reasons for the wireless mic is I thought it would really be neat to go to the Mountain of the Beatitudes and get back a good distance. And we're supposed to have a presentation there and just kind of sweep the area. So I've got a lot of ideas. And I told somebody this week, you know, people go to school for 4 years to learn photography and videography, and I've had some experience about 20 years ago, and I'm trying to do this all in 2 weeks. I mean, how hard can this be? Well, I'm finding out. So probably, you know, I'll come back with, at best, amateur stuff, but, you know, I'll still try. So here we have the Sermon on the Mount, the Beatitudes, in verse 22. Jesus said to the disciples, "But I say to you, that whoever is angry with his brother without a cause shall be in danger of judgment, and whoever says to his brother, Raca, shall be in danger of the council, and whoever says, you fool, shall be in danger of hellfire. Therefore, if you bring your gift to the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there before the altar and go your way. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer your gift." This goes contrary to human nature. And human nature is so damaging to organizations, families, and churches. Because what is the first thing we do if our brother upsets us? You don't leave your gift at the altar and go talk to him. You go and, what do you want to do? You want to go talk to everybody else about your brother and what he has done. Can you believe that, you know, choose a name, did that? No, I can't. You mean, really? And, you know, there's just, and the story becomes better and better as it gets passed around. Or worse is really probably the better descriptor. Jesus Christ said, if you go before God with your gift and you realize that you have some unresolved conflict, The proper methodology is to go to your brother face to face and resolve it, and then come back. And then come back. In organizations, it's called the water cooler discussions. And actually, some organizations feed the water cooler gossip because they find that things that they want communicated around the organization travel quicker and faster by planting and dropping gossip at the water cooler than it would if they put it out in a memo. I mean, if you send an email and a memo, they'll ignore that. But if you plant it at the water cooler and people think it's gossip, they'll spread it like wildfire. Have you heard what they're going to do now? No. Well, I was talking to the executive secretary this morning, and she told me not to tell anybody, but if you really want something to travel, that's how you want to frame it. I'm going to tell you something, but you have to promise me that you don't tell anybody else. That's the quickest way in a carnal organization to get it spread all the way around. It's always worked that way, and it still does. And it's very damaging. Because once you find out what Mike told everybody else about Joe and Sam, sorry, Mike, just came out that way, they get really upset. And it becomes much more difficult than having a face-to-face discussion and working it out. Matthew chapter 18 has a tried and true methodology that works in the church and outside the church. I will tell you that I have tested this in a lot of different scenarios, and it does work. Doesn't mean that it is easy. And it doesn't mean that it sometimes doesn't backfire, but the net result is always better than the alternative, which human nature is so inclined to participate in. Rumors, gossip. Okay, let's look at verse 15. Moreover, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. Now, of course, we put sins against you. We kind of put that in quotes for a moment. And let's just say, what if a person offends you? Or you perceive that he offends you? I remember I actually gave this sermon in Germany when we left some 12 years ago. And I'll tell you a little story about it. I gave a sermon. It was our last Sabbath there. And one of our very good friends came up to us and said, "Well, you said to go to your brother." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "What do you have against me, us and our kids?" And I said, "What?" She said, "Yeah, I mean, our kids were going to come to your house and be with your kids for the entirety of Christmas break, and you changed the time and limited the amount of time that they could be there." And I said, "Yeah, I did." And I said, "It had nothing to do, never gave it any thought. It was just that at that time I was traveling weeks on end, 3 weeks gone, a couple days at home, 3 weeks gone. And we just wanted to have a little bit of time to ourselves. That's all that it was." And she said, "Oh, I just figured that our kids were not good enough for you to be with your kids." Never thought about it. Okay? And I was so glad that she came and talked to me before we departed. Because, you know, you have all these perceived, you know, somebody looked, and I just shudder to think of the number of people that I have offended because of my grim look. When I'm concentrating, I get this, you know, whatever. I've been told by no not a few people, you have this grim look. You know, what's wrong with you? Well, we could debate about what's wrong with me, and there'd probably be a long list of things. But the grim look is simply John Miller thinking. Okay, so if I ever look at you cross-eyed, don't pay too much attention to it, because it probably doesn't mean anything. And if you think it's serious, come talk to me, and we'll work it out. I mean, I use this as an example because these were dear friends of ours. It never occurred to us, our children actually have remained friends to this day, but the fact that we wanted to have a couple of days to ourselves, I think she understood it perfectly after I gave her the details, and she came to the erroneous conclusion that since I was a preacher man, you've heard that before, you know, the preacher's kids are better than other kids, we all know that, right? And her kids just wouldn't measure up to that standard, which was a whole bunch of crock, the whole thing around. But that was the conclusion it was come to. So it's very important, and this is why I encourage people to look at Matthew chapter 18 and verse 15, and if there is a perceived offense or a misunderstanding, don't go to everybody else. Go to the individual. Ask in a nice way, and you will find in 90% of the cases that it was, first of all, a misunderstanding or something of that sort. And then everybody feels a lot better. And a whole bunch of evil can be avoided. Verse 16. But if he will not hear you, take with you one or two more, that by the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. Now here's the next step. You know, if he doesn't hear you, then, you know, there's a procedure to do it. Continuing in verse 18, and if he refuses to hear them, tell it to the church, but if he refuses even to hear the church, let him to be to you like a heathen and a tax collector. I sure would have hated the work for the IRS back in Jesus' day, because a tax collector really was a lowlife. Think about this. You know, what are the excuses that people normally give to not practice this very practical and helpful principle of going to your brother? I've listed some of them. I don't want to be judgmental. Really? I mean, let's be honest. You don't want to be judgmental. You're being judgmental by not going to your brother. Number two, you don't want to go to your brother because, you know, if you get into the discussion, you might discover that you yourself are at fault too. And that's not a good thing for a human being, I mean, is to admit that you're at fault. You know, I have a running battle with a customer right now where it's all about who said what when and who's going to look bad in this whole thing. And as a result of that, the problem's not getting fixed. And there are going to be some big consequences at some point. You see, if we ignore the truth, whatever it might be, the truth, while it might be painful, is always better than the alternative. It's easier to deal with the pain of the truth than to deal with the pain of denial over time. Number three, the other guy can take care of his own problems. I don't want to get involved. I mean, he has his problems. Let him take care of them. And then here's the next one. This actually has some legitimacy depending on your personality. You don't want any confrontation. You know, there are some people that love confrontation. That's a problem. And then there are others that just avoid confrontation at all costs. And for someone that is that type, personality type, going and talking to someone in what might become confrontational is very difficult. It still is the right thing to do. because the results and the fruits are going to be better. It's a lot easier to just complain about it and do nothing. In fact, it's not only easier, it probably feels pretty good. You ever notice when you're complaining about something, it just feels good. And then you find somebody that will listen to you. Yeah, you know what? I thought so. I didn't know, but you know, that just sounds like him. That's about the way he is. And you know what? I was, now that you mention it, the other day in church when he was there, I saw him do this and that, and it just seems to match. And the story gets bigger, and it gets better, and sooner or later it'll spill out and get to, and here's where the damage occurs. When it finally spills out and the rumor and the gossip circles around to the individual in question, now we have offense. Now we have a problem that we have to deal with. And then finally, I wrote this in German actually, that's what the preachers get paid for. I mean, let them sort it out. I think there was a little bit of background to that at the time I wrote that 12 years ago. But so how do we, let's examine Matthew 18, verse 15 and through 17, and just look at the steps and kind of analyze them. Point number one, in verse 15, it says, go to your brother and tell him his fault between you and him alone. This requires some thinking and preparation. Going to him alone and talking to the individual is very important. Let's go over to Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7. Verse 1 through 5 describes the attitude in which we need to go there. I mean, I will say that, you know, going to your brother without this attitude will set up a situation that won't be so successful. You know, you kind of walk in there and say, well, you know what, brother? You're a real sinner, and I'm just going to tell you the way it is. The truth might hurt, but you're just a low-down sinner, and here are the things you've done. And you've told him, I mean, that's what it's said to do, right? Go to him alone and tell him his fault. Verse 1 of chapter 7, judge not that you may not be judged, for with what judgment you judge, you will be judged, and with the same measure you use, it will be measured back to you. And why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye, but do not consider the plank in your own eye? Somehow it is so easy to see the minutia of faults in other people and look right past your own. Verse 5, hypocrite, first remove the plank from your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck out of your brother's eye. So some thought needs to take place before you head off to your brother to clear up your own issues, but we must not let that become an excuse not to go to your brother. Verse 12 of chapter 6, also an important point of preparation. This is part of the model prayer. We are to pray to God and forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. We actually ask God, and this is a very scary thought when you think about it, we are to ask God to forgive us in the same way that we extend forgiveness to those that have offended us. Again, if we think about this in this manner, it prepares us to go to our brother, discuss the issue privately, in a way that will prove successful. Second point here is, I've actually touched on it already, doing it alone, not initially dragging a whole bunch of other people into the matter, because that actually heightens the defense mechanisms of the person you're talking to. You know, if you kind of come walking in, three of you at a time, to talk to one person, that causes the individual to get their defenses up, and you're not going to be able to clear things out. I think I've told you the story about the videography assignment I had at Ambassador. Did I tell you that? Anybody remember that? Not yes or no? No? Okay, then here comes the story. So this was my other endeavor into videography. We are the junior class. We have to make a commercial to advertise the annual dance. And there were about four of us on the committee. So we did the storyboard. We came up with a great idea. And then we headed off to the media department to get their assistance, because we had a small television studio and we wanted to shoot some footage. And to our chagrin, the media manager was less than enthused about our wonderful idea and made life as difficult as possible for us to utilize the resources that were there. And he had a long list of to-dos, which we concluded were simply barriers to get us to the point where we said, you know, this isn't worth it, and we wouldn't bother him. Well, we were persistent. We did it. And he was difficult. I mean, there's no other way to describe it. He was just plain difficult to work with. And, you know, he's a ambassador college media manager. And we were just lowly students, and he would have us know that as well. At least so we felt. So there was an interesting team. There was John Miller, the German. There was the Frenchman, Francois was his name. And I remember all too well, he was a married student as well. He said, when we get this done, I'm going to go home. I'm going to have a long bath. That was his way of dealing with the problem. And we got through it. We played the 30-second spot. And all was well, except everybody was mad at the media manager for having made this project difficult. And so I decided, I'm going to go see him. And I did. I called him up, got an appointment, went to see him, told him his fault. Between him and me, he didn't accept it. He didn't think he was at fault. I was polite, but I said, why do you think it is that the word on the street is that no one wants to work for you? I mean, like I said, I was polite and respectful, but I delineated. I said, you know, the thing about it is, you were dealing with, for the most part, married students that had worked in the working world. I had some videography experience. Gary Stasik, my good friend, was actually a PR agent before he came to Ambassador College, had quite a bit of experience. And I said, to sum it up, I've worked with ad agencies to do this type of thing, and you asked us for much more information than an ad agency ever asked me for. And I said, bottom line, if you were an ad agency, you'd never get my business again. So it's a candid discussion. He did not agree with me. That was okay. So now to the results. I left. I had the occasion a couple of times before my college career ended where I needed media services. I'd call there. I would get service immediately. We had a good relationship from that point forward. The bottom line was simply this. While he probably never agreed with my assessment, and you know, your assessment is always 100% right, right? So, I mean, my assessment may not have been entirely correct. While he probably never agreed with me on my assessment, he respected the fact that I came to talk to him instead of taking a long bath. Okay? I've tried that in other situations in the world, and generally, in most cases, it will work. Sometimes you get really smacked in your face, but it's worth a shot. Okay, step number two. Let's go over to James chapter 1. James chapter 1, verse 26. If anyone among you thinks he is religious and does not bridle his tongue, but deceives his own heart, this one's religion is useless. How we talk and how we tell an individual the fault has a lot to do with success or failure. And yet we see that bridling our tongue, let's jump over to chapter 3, is a very difficult thing. Verse 5, even so the tongue is a little member and boasts great things. See how great a forest a little fire kindles. And a tongue is a fire, a world of iniquity. The tongue is so set among our members that it defiles the whole body and sets on fire the course of nature. It's a powerful tool we have, communication. So preparing ourselves to go and then to be circumspect in how we present it is very important. And here's how we can gauge. I believe it's very important to always have the end in mind. What is the goal of going to the brother? Is it to tell him his fault, to prove that you are right? I mean, if you go in with that approach, you probably won't be that successful. The goal should always be to win the brother or sister, for that matter, to help the individual see, to clarify. And more often than not, it becomes an issue of clarification. Because in most cases, these misunderstandings are largely imaginary or at best distorted. And when you start discussing it, and if you can do that candidly, it will help both of you. And finally, the most important thing is that our objective should be to improve the familial relationship. You know, as a church, we are a family, and that's not just a quaint saying that we've become accustomed to in the church. Point number three, take two or three others with you. Now, how do you, you know, if the objective is to help the brother, what should we be thinking about to do that? Well, I mean, if it says two or three, so why don't we take three of the biggest guys that you could possibly imagine to go visit your brother who is a little guy like me? You know, you come in and you've got two or three other people, and well, what's the objective? Let me give you some tips. You need to seek out, ideally, a person that you know the other person respects. Okay? If you take somebody with you where there's already a relationship, the chances of him hearing what is being said are much greater than to take, rather than take what looks like the members of the Chicago Mafia with you to intimidate the brother. And then finally, point number four is get the church involved. You know, that, like I said, the first two steps usually resolve 90% of the issues. And, you know, if you get to this point, you know, if you have an ongoing conflict or misunderstanding, and you can't seem to get it resolved, get me involved. I'm happy to help work things out between brethren, and you know, hopefully, I mean, I'm not. This is not the, you know, the final. Get me. Let's just put it this way. Get me involved before you get Mr. Stiver involved. Now this is on tape, so I'll tell you why. I'm not trying to be presumptuous. Here's why. I have no real authority. I just have influence in the church. I can't disfellowship you, not that I want to. And actually, I've played this role successfully in a number of cases. I'm just one of you, okay? So if there are issues, I make myself available. I don't have any authority, so you don't really have to be afraid of me. Mr. Stiver, you know, he's the big guy, cowboy hat, and you know, I'm getting myself into more trouble as I continue to talk. He'd just have a laugh at this. But I say that seriously because there is something to be said about an individual that is somewhat neutral and is not in a position of authority, which I'm not in that respect. In fact, in Germany, that was one of the ways that we were able to help the most in the traumatic time when the church came apart. I was kind of a quasi-minister. I didn't have any... it's kind of like being a team leader at a workplace where you don't have hiring and firing authority. All you have is influence. And if you can lead in that kind of situation, you've learned something very important. So getting the church involved doesn't necessarily have to be a negative thing. I think sometimes when you read that scripture, you say, okay, now, you know, we're getting the church involved, and, you know, the next step is the highway. That's not the case. I mean, the objective is to get things worked out and get everybody to work together effectively. What if that doesn't work? Let's go over to 1 Peter. 1 Peter. I mean, Jesus Christ should always be our example. And here's a case where we can follow his example in 1 Peter chapter 2. For to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that we should follow in his steps, who committed no sin, nor was guile found in his mouth, who, when he was reviled, did not revile in return, and when he suffered, he did not threaten, but committed himself to him who judges rightly. In the end, it is God that is going to sort things out if you get into an absolute stalemate. Now, why is this so important? Let's go over to Hebrews chapter 12. Hebrews chapter 12. And begin to wrap this up. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 14. Pursue peace with all men and holiness, without which no one will see the Lord. looking diligently lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up may cause trouble, springing up cause trouble, by this many become defiled. It is very important that we keep our relationships open and healthy within the church, because if you don't, what inevitably will happen, even if a root of bitterness is not beginning to sprout, is you will have a clouded vision of said person that at best will be inaccurate. And you begin to make conclusions about a person that are just simply not true. You know, maybe somebody, we have to give other people the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they were having a bad day. Maybe they were thinking about something and didn't pay attention to you. I mean, don't, please, if I don't look at you, or if I, see, for a German, the shortest distance between two points is a straight line. And you want to get from point A to point B in the most expeditious manner possible, because that's being efficient. So if I'm going from point A to point B and I'm concentrating, trying to look like that, all I'm doing is being efficient. The fact that you stood right there as I flew by does not in the least mean that I have something against you. And I'm using myself as an example, because as I tell my employees, if you get upset with me, don't be too concerned, because I don't like myself that much most of the time either. So if you're upset with me, don't bother me, just tell me. So I'm using myself as an example, as illustration. So if you have other brethren milling about and talking and they don't immediately greet you or talk to you, don't jump to the erroneous conclusion that there may be an issue. And if you feel that way, go talk to them. I want to preface again, I'm not giving this sermon today in Cambridge because I think we need it. I'm fairly in tune with what's going on here in the congregation, and we don't have a lot of that going on. We do occasionally. We have some things. I'm using, this is just the reminder of what could very quickly happen. We read it right here. It says, lest any root of bitterness springs up and cause trouble, and by this many become defiled. Because once roots of bitterness begin sprouting, and we begin to impute motives, you see, that's what you do very quickly. He ran right by me. He even bumped my elbow. Didn't even talk to me. It's a real jerk, okay? I mean, that's the way the human mind works. And maybe it was something entirely different. You don't jump. Once we start jumping to conclusions, many become defiled very quickly. Revelation chapter 21. We started at the beginning. God is building a family, and he's going to have it his way in the end. And here we have a very encouraging description. I sometimes wonder how in the world we're going to get there, given what we see in the world today. But this is true. And this is what John saw when Jesus Christ gave him a vision of the future. And this is a vision we need to keep firmly embedded. Revelation chapter 21, verse 1, and I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away. Also there was no more sea. Then I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from heaven saying, behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. That has to be the most extraordinarily encouraging words that you could possibly read. God living with men. in their midst. And notice what he's going to do. And God will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There shall be no more death, nor sorrow, nor crying, and there shall be no more pain, for the former things have passed away. Then he said, Then he who sat on the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said to me, notice, he said to me, Write, for these words are true and faithful. Brethren, we are part of the family of God. God had this vision in mind when he created Adam and Eve back in the garden. And the fact that the family of man has made a mess of it for nearly 6,000 years will not change the fact that these words, as John recorded, are true and faithful. So we are the kingdom of God in embryo. We have a very good dynamic here in Cambridge, Ohio. I enjoy being here immensely. As I said, I have bragging rights. It's the warmest, friendliest congregation I've ever had the pleasure of being a part of. Let's keep it that way. If there are little rubs, as I'm sure there are at times, go to your brother or to your sister, work it out so that we can continue that dynamic family relationship that we enjoy here in Cambridge.